Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boateng. This week, join me in listening to an episode with Lisa Vatch. Lisa is a congenital anosmic who grew up and currently lives in Montreal, Canada. She works as a lawyer, and she shares her story about what it was like growing up without a sense of smell, how she started one of the first websites dedicated to anosmia, and the Canadian Anosmia Foundation back in the early 2000s, and much more. Our interview was recorded recently on September 14th, 2020. Let's listen to the interview. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the Smell Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So to get started, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from and where do you live now?
I'm from Montreal, Canada, and that's where I live right now. I'm an attorney and a mom of young kids. I've moved around a bit. I was born and raised here, but I went to law school in Toronto. Then I went to Duke, so I lived in Durham, North Carolina. I worked for a few years in Canada's capital city, Ottawa. And then I spent a lot of time in Fort Lauderdale, Florida as well. And all those places smell exactly the same to me.
Yeah, so that actually leads me into my next question is, can you share with us all a little bit about your anosmia backstory?
Sure. So I'm congenital anosmic, so meaning I was born with anosmia, and it wasn't diagnosed till I was 16. So I'll go back to my childhood. Basically, I was very lucky to have great parents and a great extended family, and if something was wrong with me, they should have been able to tell. But they said they never knew because I was so responsive to any questions they asked about smell. I would scratch the scratch and sniff stickers or the scratch and sniff books, and I would always make the correct face. You know, if it was like a flower, I would smile. If it was a skunk, I would frown, you know. So going back, my parents had no clue. And they said I was just, you know, a people pleaser and I was smart and I just figured out what the correct answer was, even though I was not actually smelling anything. I have a lot of early memories, you know, like sitting in the car, my parents would say, "Oh, I smell a skunk." And I was like, "Oh my God, adults complain so much. There's no smell."
What was that like for you as a kid, though, realizing, I guess, that they were complaining about something and to you, it didn't make any sense? Like, how long did it take you to finally figure out that there was something that they were experiencing that you were not?
Honestly, I really didn't figure it out until this event, which happened when I was in high school, that I'll tell you about. But people would say to me, "Smell this flower." And I would say, "Okay." And I would smell it. And I just, "Oh, I don't smell anything. But if you do, that's nice, you know." And, you know, I was a horseback rider. So when I would come home from the bar, my parents would say, "Oh, your boots smell. Leave them outside." And I was offended. I was like, "My boots don't smell. Why would you say that to me?" But, you know, it never clicked that there was actually something wrong. I mean, I often had a congested nose from seasonal allergies. So, you know, I thought maybe that's why. I really just didn't think about it. And my mom said, I never asked. I never questioned that I couldn't smell something. I never said anything or else they would have just taken me to the doctor. But it never occurred to me. I guess I was a very well-adjusted child. I thought something was wrong with everyone else, you know, and nothing was wrong with me.
Right. So what was the moment where you figured it out? Was it the boots? You came in from the barn or?
No, I never figured it out when I was a kid. It was when I was in high school. I can't remember what grade. I guess it was 11th grade. And some of the boys, they brought in some stink bombs, like as a you know, prank. And they threw the stink bombs in the hallway during, I guess, the period between classes when everyone's in the hallway. So I just remember that it was this crowded hallway. And then all of a sudden, everyone was gone. And I turned around and there was nobody. And I could see this like small broken piece of glass with like this yellow liquid on the ground, but I didn't smell anything. I didn't know what it was. And everyone kind of came back out of wherever they'd been hiding. And they were like, "Lisa, what are you doing here? How are you still standing here? Don't you smell that?" And I thought, okay, something's wrong. And I went home and I told my parents, "We have to go to the doctor." Somehow we ended up at a neurologist, but I'm not sure how, but we ended up getting an MRI exam. And they said, "You have no olfactory bulbs, you have no olfactory nerves, you're congenital anosmic." And I thought, okay. And the neurologist said, "You know, I've never seen this before in my entire career, except last week, a boy the same age as you from the same town came in with the exact same diagnosis." And I thought that was really strange. But overall, my parents were thinking, okay, at least there's nothing really wrong with her. It's just that she has no sense of smell, but it's not some underlying, you know, horrible fatal condition or something. So that was it. That was the diagnosis.
So you were in 11th grade. I mean, like getting close to what is considered like adulthood for most people around 18 years of age. What was that like for you? And he told you that you had congenital anosmia. Did he provide any resources for you, or was it just, I guess, what was that moment like for you after you left the doctor?
Well, they wanted to do experiments, nothing weird, just, you know, some scratch and sniff experiments. I remember they gave me sort of a multiple choice scratch and sniff test. And I said, like, you know, if there's four answers, like A, B, C, D, I'm just going to pick them at random because I can't smell anything. So statistically, I'm going to get a few of these answers right, but it doesn't mean I can smell correctly, you know, and get the answer correct. I'm literally just guessing. So they did some tests like that, which seemed really silly because they were like, smell this. Now, is it an apple, a flower, a tree? I'm like, I don't know. Whatever you want me to pick, I'll pick because, like, I don't know. So that just
Right.
seemed kind of, you know, a waste of time. And then I just was, you know, I was 16 and I was busy and I just didn't really want to bother with it anymore. So I never participated in any other experiments.
Right. And when we were speaking beforehand, via email, you had previously mentioned to me about forming the Anosmia Foundation in Canada. So, what happened between the age of 16 and the moment when you were inspired to start the foundation, the Anosmia Foundation in Canada? What was kind of going on in those years?
It was a long time ago when I was diagnosed. I think it was like 1995. So the doctor basically told me you're missing part of your brain, and there wasn't anything else he could tell me, really. Like, as you know, there wasn't much out there. So I went to the library and I got a book, and you know, a book about the brain, I guess it was. And there was maybe one paragraph, you know, like in all my research in those days in the library without any internet, there was pretty much zero information. So I found the information that there was. I remember I photocopied like one page of a book from the library, and that was the sum total of research that was even available to me. And then again, I was a teenager. I wasn't too concerned. But after my first year of law school, I can't remember exactly why, but this was maybe 20 years ago, like summer of 2001, where people had started to actually use the internet to do research and look stuff up. And I thought, oh, let's look up anosmia. I can't remember why, but I did look it up, and again, there was really nothing. So that was when I decided to basically create a website, and it would just be an information website so that there would be some information. So I gathered up whatever I could find in any small sources where there was a small mention of anosmia, any, you know, places that were doing some research that I could find out information about. And I put it together on this website, but it was a really basic website, like really old-fashioned. And I founded actually a nonprofit organization, and I called it the Anosmia Foundation of Canada. And the idea was to maybe, you know, do fundraising or do lobbying and speak to the government to try to get more recognition for anosmia. But then it turned out it was really hard to do all those things. And I didn't have time. I was, you know, a law student. Then I was a junior associate at a really big law firm, and there was no time for any of that. So I
Right.
just basically I left the website active so anybody that wants to find it can still find it. But I haven't updated it in a very, very long time. And another thing was, I had, in those days, it was, you know, the early days of the internet. So you would just put your email address on the website for anyone to find. And so I ended up getting a lot of email responses, like really nice messages from all over the world, people who had said they had never found any information until now, and this was the first time they had anything. So that was really great. And I tried to respond to every single one. But then spam was invented, and I got just like so much spam in that account that I couldn't just deal with it anymore. You know, there was just too much. So
Right.
I just kind of shut that part down, and I just left the website there. And now there's so much out there. There's so many websites and so much just everything, resources, that I don't really feel like I need to fill that void anymore. But in those days, it was definitely a void, and I think my website was one of the first to fill that void.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're saying that it was 2001, I think that was very early access for people to find a resource that even now there's a lot more than there used to be, but there's still not a lot. So I
Yeah,
think that's pretty cool.
there was definitely nothing. And so people kind of associated my name with anosmia things. Again, this was 20 years ago. And even till now, sometimes I Google my name and I'll find random people mentioning it in the context of anosmia, but I haven't updated any of that information in a very long time.
So then the foundation itself is not currently active, is that correct?
No, not active anymore.
Got it. So another thing that I wanted to kind of pivot and speak to you about is, as a congenital anosmic, how do you think that having anosmia impacts your relationship with food and eating? Or do you think it does at all?
It's funny. It's the first thing people always ask. I don't know if it happens to you too. But as soon as they find out you can't smell, you can see their brain work. You can see the wheels turning, and you can see them about to open their mouth and say, but how do you taste? You know, it's the first question. And and I always just explain, like, I can still taste. I still have a tongue. I still have taste buds. I just don't get flavors. And it hasn't stopped me from eating a lot all the time. It's really my big vice. I don't really drink or anything else. Eating is my thing, you know. And I haven't really seen an impact on that. I think that is more impactful for people who lose their sense of smell during their lifetime. So there's a big change. For me, I'm used to this. This is how I've always tasted food, and there's no difference for me.
Yeah, I think that there's actually quite a few people on Instagram. Well, I guess not quite a few, but there's a couple of people that I know on Instagram who have either acquired or congenital anosmia. And they have food Instagrams focused on it, and their food looks fantastic. So I don't think their anosmia is impacting them in a negative way. I think it's kind of cool because they use it in a positive manner. And it's kind of unique too, because, for example, I'm thinking of Anosmic Kitchen on Instagram, Miranda from South Africa, and her dishes and things that she posts are just like blow me away every time. So I'm like, clearly having anosmia does not mean you can't cook and be a fantastic chef.
Definitely not. It just means you're focusing on taste rather than flavor, which I think is probably even more effective. You know, I mean, you're talking about getting down to the basics more of the way food tastes rather than relying on like, oh, it has a nice aroma. What if it doesn't taste like? I mean, I don't know. I'm just guessing because I don't know what it's like for someone who can actually smell things when they eat. But the food's got to really taste good because you can't smell it. There's no like, oh, that smells good. Let me taste it. No, it's purely like if I put it in my mouth, it has to taste really good. So I think maybe, you know, that affects it a little bit, but that's a positive, like you said.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing that I wanted to kind of talk with you about is your children. So you mentioned that you have children. How has being anosmic impacted you raising your children, or do you think it has at all?
Oh, it definitely has an impact. First, when I was pregnant, I was so nervous. Like, what if they would also be born with anosmia? Because I don't know. I mean, till now, I don't really know where it comes from or how it's caused. I don't know if it's like something you can pass down to your children or if it's just a freak thing that happens, you know. But it was something I thought about a lot. And when they were born, after a while, I could tell they can definitely smell. They don't have the same problem as me. My older daughter, especially, she seems to have a very sensitive sense of smell. And it's funny because I feel like now I'm living the experience of smells through them. So things that I never even thought of, I'm seeing them experience it. Like, for example, we come home from school and we walk into the house and they say, oh, we're having chicken soup for dinner. And I'm like, they're geniuses. How do they know that? How did they guess that? And then I think, oh, right, they could smell it cooking on the stove. And this happens all the time. Or they'll say, like, well, walk through a neighborhood where I've walked since I was a little girl, and they'll comment on a smell, and I'm thinking, wow, like, I never knew. I've been in this neighborhood since I was little, and I never knew. So that's been really interesting for me. And there's obviously moments of guilt sometimes, you know, like when they were babies, if I didn't realize they needed a diaper change, because even though I was holding them in my arms, I couldn't tell that there was something in the diaper, because you know, you have to be able to smell it. So there was some mom guilt associated with that for sure, but it's a smaller aspect.
Yeah. And so another question for you in regards to your children is, are they aware of the fact that you don't have a sense of smell? Like, do you guys talk about it?
Oh yeah, they know. And they're always having to smell things for me. Like, I'll say, does this shirt smell like it's clean, or, you know, things like that. So they're definitely very aware of it. I think it would be interesting to actually, you know, interview children and see like, what's it like growing up with a mom who can't smell, and see what they have to say. But again, they don't know any different, right? They don't know what it's like to have a mom who can smell things. And sometimes I think about like, what if they, like when they're teenagers, they go out smoking and they come home and I won't be able to smell it on them, you know, things like that.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that before. So another question that I like to ask people is that, when smell comes up in your daily life, do you take the time to explain to people that you can't smell?
It really depends on how much time I have. Like, I'm sure you've been in these conversations too, where people just want to talk and they have a million questions. And I'm usually happy to answer the questions, but not if it's, you know, a casual conversation. But like, if you're in a cocktail party situation and there's a lag in the conversation, you just have to mention anosmia and the conversation is off to the races because everyone has so many questions. But, you know, normally it's just, it's always the same reaction. It's either like, so how do you taste? Or people will say, well, can you smell this? What about this? Mm-hmm. What about that? And so usually I'll say like, listen, this is how I explain it. If you were born, God forbid, without eyeballs, how much could you see? Could you see this? How about that? Like, no, right. You can't see anything. And it's the same for me because I was born without those receptors in the brain that deal with smell. So no, I can't smell that or that. I can't smell anything. So, you know, I'll explain it that way.
Yeah. Another thought that just popped into my head that I'd like to ask you about is, how do you think your memory is? Do you feel like you have a good memory or a poor memory?
I have a terrible memory. And I sometimes wonder if it's connected. Like, really, I have a bad memory. I mean, I've become very organized and I write everything down. And, you know, I've come up with ways to make sure I don't ever forget anything and make sure that everything is recorded. But in general, my memory is not great. But I don't know if that's just because, like, I never sleep because I have two little kids or whether it's something else connected. But I know people say, like, oh, smells will trigger memory. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't have any of that. I'll have memories that are triggered from other stuff, like something I see or something I feel, like any other of the senses. I have memories triggered by that for sure. But obviously, anything that's triggered by smell, first of all, I never smelled the thing in the first place, so the memory can't be triggered. And second of all, right. I just wouldn't. So I think for sure it probably does affect memory, but
I think it does too. And I would be really interested to learn more if there are any studies that focus on that, or if there are, I think there are probably a few, but it would be nice to see in the future that there would be even more studies that focus on that, because I have acquired anosmia and I think that my memory now, my ability to form like new memories of things has suffered. And I don't have any data, obviously, to support that, but I just think that in the last 10 years, like I seem to be more forgetful than I used to be. And I think that not having a sense of smell is a part of that. So yeah, that's probably a new question that I'm going to have to make sure I ask everybody is, how is your memory, or how would you rate your memory?
I think it would also depend on what kind of memories you're trying to call up, because if it's something like, you know, math or whatever, that has nothing to do with the sense of smell. You don't learn that by using your sense of smell, right? But right. If it's like memories of your grandmother's kitchen and what she was baking, for sure, that's the smell, right? So I think it would depend how you acquired that memory in the first place. If it was because you were studying, then that's not going to be affected by your anosmia, I don't think. Like me as a lawyer, like my work, it doesn't really affect me, but childhood memories, for sure, those are affected, right?
Yeah. This next question that I would like to ask you is one that I ask everyone, and there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just interested in your thought process. So do you self-identify as having a disability?
So obviously, I don't have any medical background or involvement. You know, I can't speak about disability in general, but I could just tell you my personal thoughts. I mean, obviously, anosmia does meet the definition of a disability in any way. It's the one in the dictionary or the definition of the Human Rights Commission in terms of discrimination. It meets the definition of disability from the CDC, the World Health Organization, you know, everything. But for me personally, I don't walk around all day thinking that I'm like a disabled person, even though technically I am, right? As an attorney, having anosmia doesn't affect my ability to do my job. Being born without olfactory bulbs has never stopped me from achieving my goals, and it hasn't put any obstacles in my way. I don't, like, with some small exceptions, I don't need any special accommodation. You know, those are the things from what I understand, that when there's a disability, you have to consider. And in my case, they don't really apply, right? And yet, those small exceptions that I'm talking about, like, I've been in danger because of my anosmia. And I was born with this, so I'm used to accommodating myself. With someone who has suddenly lost their sense of smell would need more accommodation probably in this disability context. So for me, like, do I identify having a, I mean, I understand that I do have a disability, but it doesn't affect my daily life and I don't you know, ask for accommodation.
Thank you. Yeah, I like that question a lot actually, because I like to hear what everyone thinks about it. And disability, the word itself can be so triggering for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, but so then again, like there's people with like really, disabilities that are like not like is it a disability or not, but like clearly, right? And then they're doing Olympic level sports, and I'm sitting on the couch. So, it's such a like a big word, so it would be hard for me to really talk about it in any way. But you could look at this kind of from the other side. Like instead of saying is it a disability, you can say like really it's a superpower, because there's things that you can do that nobody else can do. Okay, they're mostly involving going into like a really smelly room or something like that, but still, it's something that makes you, that sets you apart from other people and gives you some skills that other people don't have.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think there are perks to it. I have two, I think they're 2.5 years old now, nieces, and when they were first born, I was still living in the same area as them. So that was something that was kind of nice, is that I was able to help with like diaper duty for them and for my nephew who's 5, and it was no problem for me, and I didn't mind it because obviously there's no like gag reflex for me. It's not that gross if you can't smell when
That's
you're
right.
changing their diaper. So
Right. And that's, people say to me, that's why you liked horseback riding so much, because you couldn't smell. Because you were like shoveling out the horse's stalls and it didn't bother you at all, or things like that. And it's true. And there was another time where someone had an old fridge that had been left unplugged for a long time, and it's, stank. Everything was rotten. And it was me who had to go clean it out because I was the only person who could do it with no problem. So, those are like, it's silly little things, but still. There's a positive side for sure.
yeah, I would agree with you. So this next question is, what would you like people who do not have anosmia to know about what it's like having it or living with it?
I mean, the number one important thing is to be aware of the dangers. Like if you have a roommate or a spouse or whoever or a child who has anosmia, you really need to be aware that the person who has anosmia is not going to have the same automatic reactions that you have and you take for granted, like smelling smoke and knowing that means there's a fire. We don't know that. And I can tell you, I've had some very scary, narrow escapes because of that. And I now have smoke detectors in every single room of my house, and it's like ridiculous, but I don't have a choice because I've been in situations where, I, like one example, it's just me being irresponsible, but still, at one point I put something in the toaster oven and then I turned around and forgot about it. And like an hour later, there was a banging on my door, and my downstairs neighbor was like, smelling the smoke and thinking that the whole apartment was on fire. And I turned around and there were flames coming out of the toaster oven, and he's banging on the door. And it was this very dramatic situation. I was maybe 10 feet away from the toaster oven and I didn't know it was on fire. And I have a lot of stories like that. Growing up, my parents didn't know that I had anosmia until I was a teenager. So they wouldn't have known that, let's say I'm 14 and I'm alone in the house and there's a fire and I don't smell the smoke. Like, that's terrifying. And they just wouldn't have known. So that's in the way that I mean people have to be accommodated if they do have this disability. That's one of the things that is important to accommodate.
Yeah, I agree. I think people who have anosmia, we have so many of those stories similar to what you just shared. One time I did that literally. I was washing dishes and cooking something behind me on the stove. And I had no idea that the underneath the stove area, like the burner, it had started burning and like there were flames. And I was just like, tra-la-la, like washing dishes. And my husband was like, what what are you doing? The oven is on fire or the stove is on fire. I was like, oh, oops, I don't know. So
Exactly.
yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like, you need to be aware. Like, if you have a roommate or a kid or whatever, like, you really need to pay attention to that. And like, I have the same stories. Like, I have another story where we were, when you have a baby, you have to boil their bottles, to disinfect their bottles. And my husband had put them in a pot on the stove and let them boil. And he walked away and forgot. And a couple hours later, I was holding my baby and I was like sitting and watching a movie or something. And I'm thinking, what am I seeing? Like, in the glass door, there was like a funny reflection. It looks like a fire, but there's no fire inside my house. So what am I seeing? And I'm staring at it like an idiot because I'm still, after all these years, not making the connection that, if you see something like that, you've got to jump up and deal with it. And then figure it out eventually that the entire pot with the bottles was on fire because it had been left on the stove for too long, and the flames were actually all the way up to the ceiling of the kitchen. The
Oh,
ceiling of the
that's so
kitchen was like,
scary.
was black from the flames and everything. So that could have really, like, had I not seen the reflection of the flames, right? That could have had a
Right.
very different ending, that story. Very bad ending. So it's serious.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me as you share your story and you and your family both not realizing that you didn't have a sense of smell until you were a teen, that's common from the people that I've spoken to. And I think people who hadn't thought about it before or aren't aware, you think, how could that be possible? Like, how could you not know until you were a teen? But we don't talk about smell when we're young. Like, we don't, like, explicitly test for it. Like when children leave the hospital, I think they are tested for like vision and hearing. They're not tested for smell. So it's not even something that's like on our radar that would be missing for children.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And unless something happens, like let's say one of these smoke fire situations that happened when I was very little, they would have been like, why didn't you smell the smoke? I would have been like, what smoke? What smell, right? That would have been triggered much earlier. They would have figured it out much earlier, but it just, right. You know, it didn't happen. Or if it did happen, then they just didn't put the pieces together. It's such a random and unusual thing, especially remember, I'm 42 years old. So we're talking like many decades ago. and it just, you know, nobody even thought to ask the question.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, it's not even a question still today that we are asking children, like, can you smell this? Like, we don't, I don't think that comes up as like a clinical test or anything for a lot of people. So it's interesting that it can go so long without detection.
And again, it goes back to like those scratch and sniff stickers, because I've seen these home videos of myself so small and sitting on the floor and scratching and smiling and like going through the motions and doing exactly what I was supposed to be doing. How are my parents ever supposed to know that it wasn't true?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So this next question is also another favorite that I like to ask everyone. Since you have congenital anosmia, if you could have a sense of smell now, would you want one?
I mean, I guess if I was going to be granted this scientifically impossible miracle, I would choose something a lot better than just getting my sense of smell. But it's kind of a scary thought, you know, like I've never smelled anything ever. I'm living in like a different dimension from everyone else. My world looks the same as everybody else's world, but it's not. It has no smells. It's kind of a freaky thing. And like, would I choose to walk through a portal and go into a different dimension where everything is the same, but there's smells everywhere? I don't know. It's weird to think about it. And then I think, like, imagine, like, if there's a sort of butterfly effect where if I had snapped my fingers at age 25 and gotten a sense of smell, my life would have maybe turned out completely different. I might have moved to a different city or married a different person or, you know, like, kind of a sliding doors effect. Like, you know, everything could have changed. Right. So it's, you know, having this permanent lifelong condition from birth to ask if I would change it, it's almost scary. But then again, I'm just kind of like an anxiety ridden person, so maybe that's why. And also, most people always tell me like, oh, you're lucky you can't smell. That's what they always say. It's kind of an annoying reaction. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm not lucky that I was born missing part of my brain. Like, that's not something you would say is lucky, you know. I'm not lucky that I almost died in a fire 10 times, you know, like, it's not lucky, but like, is it lucky that I can take the garbage out and I don't care if it stinks? Like, I don't know if you would call that lucky, but I don't know what you think about that.
No, I've had that same comment from people that I'm lucky that I can't smell. And for the most part, I think it's meant in kindness, but just through conversations like with yourself and other people on the podcast, it's a comment that is meant, I think, in kindness or like meant that way, but it's the same thing. Like, you wouldn't say that to someone like, oh, you're lucky you can't see this painting because it's ugly.
Yeah, like, exactly. You like, would never say it.
Yeah, let me decide for myself if it's ugly or not, you know, like.
But even like, not just that, also like, you would never make a comment like that to a blind person. I mean, like, what kind of horrible person would say something like that to somebody with a disability, right? Like, could you imagine the kind? I mean, I can think of some people that we might know in the public sphere who say things that are very, you know, rude, but like, why would you say that? So the people say it to us like it's nothing. You know, I kind of sometimes think, sometimes when people are very tall, people will say, wow, you're so tall. And I feel like they must feel the same way. Like, excuse me? You know, it's not meant in a rude way. It's just that it's like a reaction people say. And of course, if you felt badly, they would feel terrible that they made you feel badly. But, you know, this is the kind of thing where people want like more education about anosmia and more sensitivity training, I guess you would call it, you know, so that those comments don't happen. Because for me, I'm pretty thick skinned, like say what you want, it's not going to bother me. But for other people, they struggle terribly with depression and things like that because of their anosmia. And that's the kind of thing that would really trigger someone into a terrible bout of depression. And so it's not right at the end of the day to make comments like that.
Yeah. And again, I think it goes back to the fact that anosmia is not well known, and so people haven't come across it before, and so they just don't realize or they don't think first about what they're saying before they say it and how that could impact that person. Whereas, like, maybe with other disabilities, like, we've learned, like, you wouldn't say that to someone who's blind or you wouldn't say that to someone who's deaf. Again, I just think anosmia is, like, so far behind in terms of being recognized and understood, in ways that other conditions maybe already are.
Yeah, that was part of what I wanted to do with the Anosmia Foundation that I never, I mean, I did like found the nonprofit, but then in terms of, once you want to become a registered charity, at least in Canada, you have to follow certain rules, obviously. And one of them, I believe, and I don't know if this is still true, but it was sort of like no lobbying. And I thought lobbying was one of the more important things to do here, because otherwise, how do you get the word out? And also, there were people, 20 years ago when I was more involved, who couldn't get, insurance, or they couldn't get medical treatment, or they had like legitimate medical situations that weren't being covered by their insurance, or that, here in Canada we get free medical care, but you have to be able to identify what's wrong with you and have someone to treat it. And if there's no doctors who specialize in it and nobody has a treatment for it, so that was the kind of thing where I thought the lobbying would be more effective, but I think that's being done by a lot of people now, I hope.
I hope so too. So Lisa, you also mentioned to me that you have kind of a funny, I don't know if that's the right word, but you have a story that you'd like to share with all of us. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's another story that identifies, risks that you might not think about or be aware of if you were born with a sense of smell or you still have one. But it's kind of a long meandering story. But for a while, I was living in a place where the laundry facilities were far away from, my apartment. So instead of carrying this big Costco-sized jug of Tide laundry detergent everywhere I went, I came up with this genius idea to just pour it into a water bottle. So then I could just take the water bottle with me, which was smaller. So this was fine up until one day where a bunch of events were happening. Like there was an emergency, I had to run out and bring someone to the hospital, and I came home very late, and I had left all my laundry stuff, just dropped it where it was because of this emergency. And one of the things I had left was a water bottle full of Tide on my coffee table, basically, where I had left it in a hurry. Okay, so I came home, I was like so tired, I was wiped out and everything, and I was so thirsty, and I was like, oh, there's my water bottle. So I grabbed the water bottle and I unscrewed the top and I chugged it. And I don't know what laundry detergent like Tide or anything like that actually smells like, because I've never smelled it, but I assume it has a smell, and I assume it doesn't smell like water. You can let me know if I'm wrong about that, but I
No,
had
you're
no
right.
idea.
It doesn't smell like water.
Right. So anybody else would have opened the bottle and smelled that it wasn't water, and they would not have drank it. But I just like really chugged it, and it was kind of halfway down my throat before my taste buds connected to my brain and said like, whoa, 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 stop drinking that. It's not water. It's something really bad. And I started to spit it out, and I was freaking out, and I had to call poison control. The number on the back of the laundry detergent box where it says, if you've drank this, please call this phone number. I was so embarrassed. I mean, I was an adult and
Right.
I had done this ridiculous thing, but it's because of my disability. And it was my mistake. Everyone said, like, why would you put Tide in a water bottle knowing that you can't smell anything? Like, why would you put yourself in a risk like that? But it never occurred to me that that would happen. So, I mean, I was fine. In the end, I was okay. But it's such a ridiculous thing to happen. And it's this like famous story where like all my friends' kids think it's so funny that Lisa drank Tide, but it's not funny. And I don't know, it's just all these dangers that you don't even think about.
Well, you were like an early Tide Pod challenge adapter.
I know. And of course, when that was in the news, everyone was calling me and saying like, ah, remember when you drank Tide? And I was like, I remember like it was yesterday, because it was really bad. Like it burned my throat and like burned my face. It's you're not supposed to drink that. And you're certainly not supposed to chug it, which I had chugged because I thought it was water. Oh boy.
Wow. How much do you think you got down before you realized what was going on?
I feel like a gulp and a half, maybe like two gulps, because it
Yeah.
was a quick thing when you're sort of drinking water that when you think it's water that quickly. And it's funny to see how the brain sends its signals, because of course the smell would be faster because you don't have to actually have it in your mouth before your brain knows what it is, right? You would smell it from a distance. But for me, it had to be like in my mouth, before I knew what it was. And once it's in your mouth, it's going down your throat and your brain's like, stop, stop, but it's too late. So, I mean, these stories,
Yeah.
they're crazy. And of course, I laugh, but it's not funny. It's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that it seems at least that there was no like long lasting damage and that your brain like told you to stop pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, poison control told me what to do. They were like, you know, if you throw up, they have like this whole rule where they know if you're going to be okay or not. Like, I guess if it comes out of you pretty quick, you're going to be fine. But if it's gone down into your internal organs, then you're going to have a bigger problem. But for me, I ended up being okay. But it's like another cautionary tale. Like if you're anosmic or if your kid's anosmic, just make sure they don't do anything really dumb, like putting things that are not food into food containers. That's my tip.
Right. That's a good tip. Thank you for sharing. Do you have anything else that you'd like to share with listeners about yourself or about your anosmia journey?
No, not really. I mean, I feel mine is maybe different from other people because it didn't happen suddenly to me. So I didn't have something ripped away from me the way that a lot of people like yourself have this huge part of their life like ripped away, or like you were pushed into a different dimension without wanting to be in that dimension where everything's missing. So I feel a lot of sympathy for the people who are going through a much harder time than I did. Like, again, I'm thick skinned. I'm pretty well adjusted. I go through my daily life. As long as nothing goes on fire, I'm okay.
Right.
But I do feel, you know, my heart goes out really to the people who struggle so much and have these medical conditions that they can't get covered, you know, on their insurance, or they can't get an ENT to help them. Or in my case, it's neurology, but there's nothing that can be done anyway. So I'm not looking for anyone to help me because nothing can be done to help me. But you know, for people where there is potential for treatment and they still can't get access to it, that's really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think kind of what you're saying, like at this point, I'm 10 years in. So for me, I'm like, okay, like I know how to cope. I know like when I, like what I need to do for myself to make myself feel better. If I'm like feeling down about having anosmia, it's not fresh anymore. Like it's passed with time, that those kinds of things. So I'm pretty like, I feel like I'm pretty resilient to things, but there are a lot of people online right now who are terrified because this is brand new for them because of COVID. Like within the last 6 months, these people have become anosmic and they're just so lost. And I don't wish to go back to that experience. Like myself, I don't want to be at that point in my anosmia journey like ever again. But kind of like what you're saying, I just, thoughts are with them to like help them get through this time right now, because it's not easy for people who are like newly going through the journey.
And especially for people who their job depends on smell, maybe, or, you know, something like that. Like if you're, I don't know, a chef or like a wine person, or I don't know, like different things where you really do need to be, even like a fireman, I guess, needs to be able to smell where the smoke is coming from. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But there's a lot of people for whom the effect is huge.
Yeah.
It's really sad. I mean, I remember when I saw this news coming out that one of the results of COVID is anosmia, or you know, losing your sense of smell, even if it's temporary, I just kind of was shaking my head going like, oh my god, it's gonna be in the news now, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to say funny because that's the wrong word, but you know, like it's crazy, I guess, is the word, that this huge pandemic that's sweeping the world, and one of the results is you lose your sense of smell, where we've been struggling with this, you know, for so long. And I don't know, I guess a lot more people that are going to be joining this club, this unfortunate club, because of this pandemic. It's like yet another horrible thing that COVID is causing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and speaking with me today. It's always nice to speak with someone who has congenital or acquired or whatever it is, but it's always just nice to speak to someone who has anosmia as well.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's nice because most people just really don't get it. So it's nice to speak to someone who's in the same boat. Totally.
Thank you.
Thank you to Lisa for coming on the show and sharing her anosmia story with all of us. If you would like to check out the website that she created back when she started the Anosmia Foundation, click on the link in the episode notes. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at thesmellpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram @thesmellpodcast and visit online at thesmellpodcast.com. I'm always interested in sharing listener stories. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the Smell Podcast if you listen using iTunes. Reviews are helpful because they allow others to find the show. And finally, if you would like to financially support the podcast, you can do so by clicking on the link in the episode description. I appreciate your support. And a huge shout out to everyone who currently contributes to the show, because your generosity is what makes the podcast possible. Until next time, have a great day.